welcome everybody
and thank you for making the time, because I know even though you are obliged to be here, you also are required to attend to other matters. We are pleased that you decided to prioritize this committee. We particularly want to welcome Mr. Sipiwe Phiti, who is representing SALGA. You are a councillor, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah, from which municipality?
The SALGA Route 36 SALGA PEC, Western Cape.
Western Cape?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then there's Zilo Mukara, who is also a researcher but working with SALGA. Yeah, welcome. And as I say, everybody else is welcome. Most also our legal advisors here who are going to be assisting us in understanding the submissions that have been made as they did last time. The agenda is quite simple, and I take it that you all have copies of it. First item being the adoption of minutes. These minutes should be the minutes of the 28th of August and the 18th of September. We are dealing with the minutes of the 28th of August because we have not as yet adopted, considered and adopted them. Because there are many decisions that we took which we believe ought to be made part of the program of action. Then after the adoption of all the minutes, we'll deal with new submissions that have since come to the committee after our strategic planning workshop. Like they did last time, the legal advisors will present these submissions which have been summarized and indicate to us what they believe ought to be done with them, whether we should indeed proceed to have the constitution amended or refer the matters to relevant structures or call on those people to comment. Well, that is a decision that we make ourselves, of course. Then, from there, we go to the strategic plan. You will remember that we did not concretize our position regarding the strategic plan. We took it as a work in progress, submitted it to the House Chairperson, who required it for purposes of understanding our plan for the next 5 years. We are therefore to take our final positions on the strategic plan today. Then if time still allows, because we plan to adjourn at 12:30, we will then go to the submissions, deal with them substantively, because last time and today they are just to be presented for us to understand, ask questions for clarity. But after the strategic plan, we are required to deal with those submissions, take decisions as to how we take them forward. Hopefully we won't go to 5. We'll just go to 6 after that. This is risky, but is there anyone who wants to comment on the agenda, like adding something else? Okay. So shall we proceed then to the minutes of the 28th, which I assume everybody has copies of. We do the usual by starting with corrections. Any other business? It's an item that ought not to be placed there because gives all sorts of ideas to people who make suggestions. On page 1, are there any corrections that ought to be made?
May I just remark that it is really to go in the insight of other members. The long paragraph in the middle of the page, I'm not sure it reflects. Are we looking at the minute?
The 28th?
Yes.
August. Page correction. Mr. Hensley. Everybody? AR, not RA. AR, not RA. Any other correction on page 1? Shall we proceed to page 2? Any corrections? Someone who was not here, who is recorded as having been here, or vice versa? Page 3? Any corrections? Page 4? Any corrections? Page 5, any corrections? Anyone moving the adoption of the minutes and the true reflection of what happened? Mr. Swartz? Anyone seconded? Proceed. Well, the minutes therefore are duly adopted. Now shall we go into matters arising? On page 1, anything? Page 2? Nothing. Page 3? Isn't this the page you might have wanted to say something?
No, I was on the wrong date altogether.
Oh, I see. Now, on page 3 and 4, I think there are certain decisions that were taken. Like under outstanding submissions, the last paragraph. Committee agreed that the panel should be invited to brief it on progress regarding a proposal submitted and other similar situations. And similarly, on page 4, the committee agreed that we need to engage the Department of Agriculture on that particular submission. There again, on page under the DEFSA submission, there are things that needed to be done there. So my view is that we should place these on the program of action. We shall have to find a way of finding time to invite these people to come and elaborate and explain to us all of these things, because most of them were submissions that were made before us. They are still hanging. No decision by Parliament has been taken. So in order to show the people out there that we are serious, when we invite them to make submissions, we need to finalize them. But on D, on page 4, maybe this is a matter that should have been raised under corrections. That decision that was taken, we simply said it was agreed that it should be shelved, but we don't indicate on what basis that it would be shelved. It was to be shelved on the understanding that there is a process that seems to be underway to review or look at the provincial system, which is conducted by the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. I think it was on that basis that let us not concern ourselves with that at the moment, so that a person who reads this must understand why we took the decision that we took, that it should be shelved. And then further down on the same page, under decisions 4 and 6, the researcher should follow up on the recommendation of the previous committee around the submission regarding the inclusion of the CASA as one of the Chapter 9 institutions of the Constitution. And there, I think we might, want to request a reporter to how far the research has been done regarding the possibility of getting ICASA to be a Chapter 9 institution.
The answer is given that the main thrust of that submission was, of course, that the word broadcasting should be replaced by the word electronic communications, and the matter of the addition of ICASA to section 181 was a possible further proposal for amendment. But the main amendment and the thing agreed to by the previous committee was the replacement of the word broadcasting by the word electronic communication. Because it is in chapter 9, the question is whether it should be added onto section 188.
That submission, which requires section 192 to be amended.
That
provision must not refer only to broadcasting, but to electronic communication, which covers everything.
Correct.
And as I understand, the decision was taken that the amendment must be effected. Do we really, I'm thinking as I'm sitting here, do we really need to call on these people that we said needed to be called, if that is in essence the only thing that is required, maybe for certainty's sake or what?
In my view, not, because in fact the law that was completed after the Justine White submission was written, the ECA, the Electronic Communications Act, already makes the proposal a legal reality. Statutorily, ICASA now does independently regulate electronic communications in general, with the exception of one single clause under which the minister retains certain powers. So, in my view, no, it's not necessary to rehear the whole thing. If we can find a way of reinstituting the decision, and the question then becomes, how is that done? Do we simply confirm the decision and what, and pass it to the Minister of Justice?
Because the legal experts here might not be that fair with what we're talking about, but would you want to comment a bit on this, Jenkins, or are you not familiar with what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Honourable Members and Chairperson. Thank you. I think for me, I'm not 100% familiar. You're correct on that. Let me put it that way. The second thing I want to say is that what I'm hearing is that the Electronic Communications Act broadens the mandate of ICASA compared to the Constitution. And the question there is that now unconstitutional? I'm not aware that that would be unconstitutional. But if there is the issue of constitutionality, then clearly we must look at the Constitution and say, well, then we should adapt the Constitution. But that actually opens a whole can of worms, because you're actually then making an act constitutional retrospectively, if that is the question about constitutionality. And I, for the life of me, cannot see why it would be unconstitutional, having not carefully studied everything that's been spoken about here. And it's quite interesting. I read a case yesterday, which is not relevant here, but there's a principle in the case that's highlighted, and that's called the principle of constitutional subsidiarity. And the Constitutional Court says that is the principle they use to look at when action is in fact constitutional or not. You're not first and foremost running to the Constitution. You first look at that enabling legislation that is enacted because of the Constitution. So the question really in terms of ICASA's mandate is, what does the Electronic Communications Act say? And that's what we will look at first and foremost. Unless, as I said, there's a question of constitutionality. But that's a complicated one, in fact. But if the question doesn't arise, then...
I do not think for a minute that the constitutionality of the ECA is in question. I mean, you can always expand rights, or you can always expand independence. I don't think for one second that that's a problem. It's just that the argument is quite simply that Section 192 is outdated. Broadcasting can no longer technologically be separated from telecoms and IT as a result of technological conversion. You can't separate them anymore. They used to be two separate categories of endeavor, operating under completely different licensing regimes, depending on the technology they used. That has fallen away because of the advance in technology. And therefore, the ECA deals with reality. And the argument is that the Section 192 ought to catch up. Yeah.
Okay, well, to a person listening, if Section 192 has to be amended in order to facilitate what is being done under the ECA Act, then that would mean then that the ECA Act is unconstitutional. But I hear the argument that you've been presenting. I think what needs to be done is for the legal advisor to research and advise us as to how do we take this matter forward, because to me it seems as if it's a straightforward matter. But let us do it correctly. and consider all these things that are in the back of our minds, that if the act is broader than the constitution, then something has to be done to realign the act with the constitution. So we'll rely on you to give us an advice on how to take this matter forward. There has been the view that let's call the experts. I think that is the decision we took in the last meeting. We'll be going to those minutes, and so that they can come and explain to us more. But it does appear as if this is a straightforward matter. But depending on the advice we'll be getting from you, we'll take an appropriate decision. Shall we then proceed on that basis to... Is there any other matter arising? Those were the matters that I had identified. Together with the chair here. Okay, shall we... The meeting has been adopted. The minutes have been adopted. Shall we proceed to the minutes of the 18th, following the same procedure of highlighting corrections. Ainsley would be AR, not RA. In the minutes of the 18th. That is one correction. Then on page 2, any corrections? On page 3?
Sure.
There's a thin line between corrections and matters arising, but Dean, and then Roy.
Other members may assist, but this is where I wanted to look at the long paragraph. I'm not sure it reflects exactly what we meant, neither am I sure that it matters all that much, but we said that the committee believed it needed to look at its role in constitutional legislative processing. It was proposed there was a need to broaden its mandate in order to allow it to deal with legislation that amends the Constitution, as well as legislation that gives effect to the constitutional rights in Chapter 2, the Paya, Papuda, and Paja. Now, the next sentence says, it was agreed that the process of review of the Constitution would have to include reviewing each chapter of the Constitution. The way I remember it, some people felt that we should take special care of the three acts just mentioned, and Dr. Ambrosini then said that, but that's not correct, but because every chapter of the Constitution is relevant. Every chapter, there is legislation giving effect to everything in the Constitution, and we would end up invigilating absolutely every law. So I think that was the thinking, and that sort of it left the question hanging whether we should take special care of those three acts. Now, I'm not sure how much this takes us further, but it did seem to me that this was not exactly a reflection. The idea of reviewing each chapter of the Constitution was not, it was raised in argument to the previous suggestion that Chapter 2 should enjoy our special attention. And if others agree with me that is what happened, then I'm not sure how we should adjust. This the reflects discussion rather than decision, doesn't it?
Any comments on that? First of all, you are not taking issue with the idea that we should be involved in legislation that seeks to amend the Constitution. Yeah, okay, that's agreed to. Then on the matter of us dealing with legislation that gives effect to the Bill of Rights contained in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, namely those pieces of legislation, is that our responsibility, really?
No, and I was the one that was very sympathetic to that, but I thought Dr. Ambrosini was quite persuasive in saying, hang on, then you have to do everything. On the other hand, I do think that there is room for oversight of the Papuda, and especially by talking to the Equality Review Committee, which I see Mr. Dano has put into the strategy for us. I think there's room for that, but I do find it persuasive that we can't look at each and every, all legislation. And I would rather see us interacting with the Chapter 9s than with the Chapter 2 laws.
What about this argument that every piece of legislation is a product of the Constitution in a way, and that all bodies that are set up in terms of that legislation have something to do with the Constitution. Where do we start and where do we end in identifying and dealing with such bodies? There was this idea amongst ourselves, at least as a study group, that should we not, in fact, be looking at the submissions, first of all, and see if any of the submissions feels that there's an impediment to the achievement of a certain goal by the Constitution, which cannot be achieved through other legislation and through the other these bodies because of that particular clause that ought to provision that ought to be amended. Then, in that instance, we call that body, be it a Chapter 9 institution or any other institution that has been set up in terms of the law, to come and talk to us about that, rather than confining ourselves or identifying bodies that we ought to oversee. Steve?
Thank you, Chair. That's not a bad proposal. I do also think that we need to... that would be one way of looking at it. There are other outstanding issues that one can look at as well in prioritizing. The key is how to prioritize the work. The submissions are there. One needs to look at that. So one could approach that venue as well, that avenue. The other one is that is the review of Chapter 9 institutions. That report is before, it's 2 years, 3 years that it's been done. That is a report that one could also look into as well, that we could then... We could pick it up. Nobody's picking that up as well.
Does the board say anything about amending the Constitution?
Well, it deals with the oversight of those bodies, and there are some provisions there to bring it all under one chapter, one Human Rights Commission, all those chapters dealing with human rights. So there are some very substantive suggestions in that report, and it's just hanging. Nobody's picking that up. So I think the key for us as a committee is to prioritize. Clearly, we've got submissions before us. There's that report that's been in the news when we had the Human Rights Commission interviews. A lot of people were saying what's happening with that report. So I think that those are some of the things we could look at. Thank you, Chair.
Then that in line, therefore, is what you're saying, that let us look at matters as they come. There is this matter now of the report on the Chapter 9 institution. If then there are suggestions in it that the Constitution must be amended, let us take this matter up. Yeah.
Chairperson, I just want to on the other hand, to be cautious that we don't pick up each and every issue that the other committees actually should have played oversight over. For instance, in my view, if we're going to pick up a report just because the Committee on Constitutional Development is not doing its work, then it will be most of the time not picking up all these issues of which other committees are supposed to play oversight over. And at the end of the day, we end up with those turf wars again. So I'm just being cautious that we don't find ourselves picking up the work of other committees just because of them being not having time or being negligent. It ends up being in our lap.
There was that suggestion, Chair, that we ought to work cooperatively with committees whose work we need to get involved with. We don't want to take over, but if there's a need for a review of the Constitution, we need therefore to bring that to their attention, have a meeting with them, and then take the matter forward. Mr. Chan?
Chair, I would need your guidance. I thought that we are dealing with corrections of the minutes.
There's a thin line between matters arising and corrections.
Okay. Your invitation. But Chair, as to corrections, what I'm really concretely proposing is that we shouldn't be saying here it was agreed that the process of review of the Constitution would have to include reviewing each chapter. It was really part of discussions, and I just think the word "it was agreed" is therefore problematic. Whereas, whereas the previous sentence is okay because it was proposed that there was a need to broaden the mandate and do the chapter two. but that the sentence thereafter says it was agreed that the process.
We'll come back to this matter. Let's just note that the point that was made, that in fact it was not agreed but proposed and discussed.
The other correction is on paragraph 1, the last sentence, that a consensus was based on relation to the term activity proactive. The proactive word was raised, but I don't think there was consensus on it. So how will it catch up?
I suppose what we need to do, like with the matter raised by Honorable Smith, we'll note that if there was no agreement on that, then we proceed to make corrections. And then we'll come and deal with them substantively as matters arise. The problematic word is a consensus. Yes.
But I thought there was agreement. There was agreement that we would use the word activist.
Activist.
We had a long mini debate and mini discussion, and the agreement eventually was that we would in fact use the word activist.
The problematic word again is there was consensus. So we had agreed that there was no consensus. There was no consensus to that effect. It's arguable to what consensus. Was to what effect was the consensus made? Let's just agree to correct the word consensus to replacing words and things like that. We'll come back. And any other corrections on page 3? Okay, page 4, any corrections? Okay, page 5, any corrections? Page 6, any corrections? This is good because all of these things, these minutes were circulated to us beforehand. It's clear that we read them. Yeah. Page 7, any corrections? 7.
I noticed that we made a number of inputs from myself and Jambasini that haven't been captured or commenting on that, but I don't think. I just maybe in future we need to, if it's briefly go to on legal issues, maybe we need to manage it for future purposes. I noticed that a lot of the comments, but I see this is merely a, if you look page 4 for example, there's a legal opinion on the submission. We made short comments. One doesn't want to capture everything that was said, but maybe for future reference we can try to capture if it's on a legal issue. Maybe just as a suggestion, I'm not saying we need to amend it all now, it will take us back too much. Thank you.
Yeah, if we'll recall, we said we were entertaining this submission on the basis of seeking to understand the import of the submission, not to discuss them, because we delayed discussion of them. Maybe that's why the opinions that were raised are not necessarily captured, but I take it your point is noted, because those comments may lead to a decision being taken one way or the other. Page 7. Page 8. Okay, that then brings us to. We want to move the adoption of the minutes as a correct reflection of what transpired. Don't you want to volunteer this time? Of course. Any second? Roy? Ainsley? Okay, the minutes are duly adopted. Now let's go into matters arising. I imagine there's no matter arising on page 1. I beg your pardon? The 18th, we are dealing with the 18th. Those that are dealt with and done with. 18th, I mean, page 1, nothing. Page 2, matters arising. Page 3, obviously, there are matters arising. Activist or proactive. What is the the dictionary meaning of this word, Mr. Dan. I did request him to look at. Oh, one more thing regarding Mr. Sukwase's comment. When these meanings are circulated, it is in order for people to comment and submit those comments to the secretary, who in turn will forward them to us as chairperson, so that by the time we come here, at least we have a document that seems to reflect the understanding of the members of the Congress. Mr. Tan, you want to come before him?
I'm not too sure why we ask you for a definition.
Inside of the argument.
I don't think it's a question of definition. I think it's a question of consistency.
Okay.
Parliament describes itself as activists.
Mm-hmm.
Our provinces, our legislators describe themselves as activists.
Mm-hmm.
Our divisional councils describe themselves as activists.
Mm-hmm.
So surely for the sake of consistency, why on earth would a committee of parliament then wish to then use another term?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's a question of definition.
Okay.
I think it's a question of what is in use.
All right. So what are we saying? We're taking, therefore, the position by Mr. Ainslie that his understanding of what we did was that we agreed on activists, in spite of the fact that there were some views about proactive and other words.
We don't want to reopen that negative idea. There's a place of that. That's what it is. You can just report, well, is the suggestion that we now amend the minutes? We're now doing minutes arising from the minutes. The sentence is the consensus was reached on it. Now we amended that thing.
That is not true.
Okay, then it's a test set, and my suggestion is we do proceed on that basis unless there's now a different view. Are we not saying we need to relook at the whole issue of whether we agreed to replace the term activist with pro-act? As a matter of fact, I thought that was decided, whether it's consensus or not, is a different issue.
Oh yeah, it was decided that it's activist parliament.
Therefore, is Mr. Andy's suggestion that we now relook at this?
No. He is correcting this. He says, in fact, that there was agreement that, in fact, it was decided, as you say, that it is an activist parliament. I think that the term that is going to describe the kind of parliament we have.
Yes.
In fact, that was my understanding also, that even though there was no, in fact, this was a failure on our part to say, this is what we decide on. That is an activist parliament. But the flow was in that direction, even though there was there were raised concerns about that by other parties. So as this says, generally my understanding also, this fourth parliament is regarded as an activist parliament. And that is the term that is generally used. And do you want to, as a constitutional review committee, you want to take our own position, which is somewhat slightly different from that of the rest of parliament?
Chair, let's just move on. We actually outnumbered the ANC in that meeting, so if, as a matter of interest, we could have outvoted you, and the flow was necessarily in our direction. But it is, as my colleagues say, semantic, so let's just move on.
No, thank you. That is then an activist parliament. Now, the other matters, I think they need to be... Yeah, this paragraph... It could have been structured differently in the sense of identifying separate ideas that come through it. We agreed that legislation seeking to amend the Constitution must be brought to our attention. How is that to be done? Will that require an amendment of the rules or what?
I think surely we give effect to that in our strategic plan, and I think we've discussed before that there's nothing, in fact, stopping us from dealing with constitutional amendments. I don't know how we would do that.
Have we established that as a fact that as a joint committee we can process legislation?
We wouldn't be processing it, but we would be expressing ourselves, and surely it's part of what we'll develop under our strategic plan, how we do that. how we do we ourselves take, for example, the 17th constitutional amendment soon coming. Do we look at that on our own? Do we ask the Justice Committee whether we can come and sit in on public submissions? Do we have a gentlemanly and ladylike discussion with the Justice Committee on once we have formed a view on it? I'm sure the modalities are something that we can create as we go along. But surely for the present purposes, all we do is, in the strategic vision, say that it is our intention to study constitutional amendments when tabled, for example. But I had understood it to be our view that there is in fact nothing that prevents us from looking at them. I share the view of Mario Ambrosini that the Constitutional Review Committee was never intended to deal only with the once a year public invitations and submissions. The first Constitutional Review Committee had half the cabinet in it. The idea was that was the committee that would deal with constitutional amendments. And then, of course, it became really difficult to get all of the cabinet ministers here.
I think, Dean, we were agreed that we want to be assisted with that. But how do we go about it? Because when a bill is tabled before Parliament, it is referred to a committee. So doesn't that mean then that rules will have to be somehow amended to indicate that this particular bill must be referred to also the Joint Committee on Constitutional Review?
I think that's unanswerable, and I think in fact the thrust of Ambrosini's letter was precisely that the rules needed to be adjusted.
Any views on that? On what you're talking about?
Yes, no, I'm aware of it, Honourable Chair, thanks. The issue is that it must be in the rules if it must flow automatically to the committee. Otherwise, the referral of a constitutional amendment bill is in the discretion of the Speaker of the House to refer it to a committee or committees. Mm-hmm. The Speaker can refer it to more than one committee. Also, it's for those committees to confer, and that's what I'm hearing, where this committee wants to position itself, is to confer with other committees considering a constitutional amendment for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The letter from Dr. Ambrosini is, you know, we had the discussion last time, and the subsequent letter flowed from that, and I think that it was copied to you, where he says, is a joint committee then the appropriate mechanism to look at all constitutional amendments? And the Constitution accepts it like that. If we look at Section 45, it says it must be the joint committee also considering Section 74 legislation. So consideration of legislation, and what he says in his letter, is of course not the same as processing and reporting on it. Nothing stops this committee, but I would, from a procedural point of view, and one must really speak to the tables about this, for a committee just to seize issues, that's usually not done in Parliament. Usually it must be referred. No.
Mm, we can just take it and then this is for us.
The previous discussion on the Professor Carter Ashmore report as well. Now, there are many recommendations in there, and a lot of the recommendations would, in my view, probably fit in this committee. Not the whole report, but some of them.
Mm.
But it would be for the House to actually seize them and say, these recommendations go there, these go to that and that committee, and those go to that committee.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the correct procedure. And behind that, of course, is the political process, which the committee chairpersons can take to the respective whips. And as well, that I would advise that we speak to the tables to get the proper procedure going.
I would imagine, therefore, that when we take a decision to that effect, there will be other decisions. In fact, a report will have to be tabled in Parliament. I don't think we want to lift this one out and refer it to the relevant structures to facilitate its implementation. It will be part of the various resolutions that we are taking, which will be contained in the report. So we can move then on that one. Then the one about legislation giving effect to the Bill of Rights, contained in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, and examples are given of Paja, Pepuda, Paia. I think I did comment, and it was sort of an agreement that we don't want to confine ourselves, if you like, to these particular pieces of legislation or any other legislation. We have a mandate to deal with any legislation that has an impact on the Constitution, and that where there's a need, a view that the Constitution must be amended, we'll take the matter up, take it up also with the relevant structures, be it the Chapter 9 institutions, be it the various departments, taking into account the relevant portfolio and select committees. I think that is the position we are taking. So, then if we were to proceed further on Ambrosini's the suggestion of the of how we review the Constitution. He said we should set a program where we start from Chapter 1 and deal with Chapter 1, review Chapter 1. Is it still in order? Is it still fine? Does it meet our goals and intentions as a nation? And then proceed to the next chapter until the last chapter. But then there was the view, as the minutes indicated, that no, we might need to prioritize the chapters that we want to do that on. But as has been pointed out, did we actually agree that that is what we want to do? considering also that there are many things, that there's a lot of work that is before us, by way of the submissions that have been made, as well as submissions that were never completed in the previous parliament. So maybe we just note that without taking any decision on it. And then if we have to proceed to other matters arising, looking at the last paragraph, amended version should be submitted to the office of the strategic plan. We said the plan was not fully it was not adopted in full, but as a work in progress, that it would be submitted to, was it submitted to Parliament, to the House Chairperson? Oh, okay. But we will be proceeding to look at it. And next page 4, we dealt with the matter of ICASA, right? We've already taken a decision on that one. Then, at the bottom of page 4, Feldman's submission, I noted something here. The opinion noted that in reading the two cases, it did not appear that the Constitutional Court regards the protection of religious communities in the Constitution as contradictory to the secular nature and legal. No. I have no matter arising there. On page 5, here again, it might be difficult for us to discuss this substantively, because we are still to deal with this submission as submission. So I take it then that we are done with the minutes of the 18th of September. Now we proceed to item number. We're still on minutes. Item number 2. Legal advisors' presentation of legal opinions. We have a set of documents headed legal opinions. I think there are about, how many of them? They start on 8, committee reference number 8 to committee reference number 15. We all have those documents, right? So we'll start with the legal advisor, advocate, Vaccine, who will take us on document number 8. Same principle. You present and then ask questions for clarity, and then proceed to the next one. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. That is the submission by a Ms. or Mr. Reuters, and the document is completely not legible. We couldn't even find the person's address to try and contact the person. We attempted many times, but I think both the committee section and legal advisors couldn't make out any of the what the person was trying to say, or and we couldn't locate the person. It is in English,
so
but it's not legible.
So you did what you could to try to locate the person, and
there was no address on so we couldn't even contact the person.
What do the adverts say when people are invited to make submissions? Do we call on people to give their contact what you call details? Not specified. It's supposed to be, well, people are supposed to indicate who they are, where they are to be found. Okay, there's nothing we can do in that light. Shall we proceed to the next one? Submission by Ms. Anne Mary Robb in legal capacity, presented by Advocate Berger.
Thank you, Chairperson. The submission by Ms. Robb relates to her request that the committee address the issue of legal capacity. She says that as a survivor of the mental health care system and an activist defending the rights of mental health care users, she suggests that the Constitution has to make it clear that legal capacity of a person cannot be taken away from them arbitrarily. She submits the term conscious may seem to suffice, but including psychosocial, physical disability will enrich our Constitution in line with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. And my view, Chairperson, on the matter is that Section 9 of the Constitution already provides that the state may not unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against anyone on one or more grounds, including disability. So our Constitution already protects people with any form of disability from discrimination, because the term disability encompasses all forms of disability, including disability induced by mental reasons. While it is true that the disability induced by mental health problems might affect one's legal capacity, our law of in South Africa, the law dealing with legal capacity, which falls under the law of persons and family law, makes it clear that all human beings have legal capacity, irrespective of their personal qualities. It cannot summarily be taken away from them. There may be instances, for example, where it may be limited due to whatever circumstances a person finds themselves under. Maybe it's a child. Then that child's capacity, of course, will have to be limited. For example, when the example would be it's limited to the extent that they cannot marry without the consent of their parents. Chairperson, it is true that the convention in its Article 12, that is the UN Convention, it recognizes that people, persons with disability have legal capacity on an equal basis with others. But it is still my view that by recognizing all forms of disability and including it in Section 8 of the Constitution, the drafters of our Constitution recognize that all human beings have legal capacity. And they also recognize our obligations as a country that ratified the Convention, or the UN Convention on the Rights of the People with Disabilities. My recommendation for the committee would then be that as much as our Constitution sufficiently addresses the matter of disability and the protection of the rights of people with disability, as well as the South African Law of Persons and the Mental Health Care Act, Chairperson Number 17 of 2002. If Ms. Roth feels that the measures that are put in place do not sufficiently cater for the needs of people with disability induced by mental issues, I suggested in my opinion that further information can be sourced from the register of any High Court or a Department of Justice for further explanation on issues of legal capacity. Should people be experiencing problems in dealing with matters of their legal capacity? Furthermore, Chairperson, it is also my suggestion today that this matter can also be referred to the relevant committee, parliamentary committee, for an examination of laws on guardianship and mental and disability induced by mental issues, to consider whether the laws and policies that are in place now sufficiently promote supported decision making and respect the legal capacity of persons with disability. Because those committees have a responsibility to do oversight and to check whether the laws are up to date. They're up to date with the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, and they're up to date with the challenges that are facing people that have mental health issues. So the matter might be appropriately addressed by referring it to the relevant committee to check that the laws that we have, that we currently have, do they sufficiently cater and promote supported decision-making for people who have mental health issues. Because even the Convention on the Guidelines for Parliamentarians, the UN Convention, it also contains some suggestions on what parliamentarians can do. One of the suggestions is that it requires parliamentary, it suggests that parliamentary committees that the Convention falls under their scope should include legal capacity and supported decision making on their agendas on an ongoing basis. That's it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I ask for questions for clarity, I think there's a lot that you said that would be useful in helping the committee take a decision on this particular submission, but it's not included in the submission. Like the acts that you are referring to, the UN Convention that talks about us as parliamentarian committees having to do certain things about this. Maybe we might want to augment the submission in that regard, so that when we have to take a decision, we are informed by the other issues that you raise.
I used with Mr. Dano during the process of making the report,
okay,
of drafting the report to ensure that it's all appropriately reflected.
No, I'm talking about us when we have to decide on this one, because
okay,
we'll be discussing it, whether to refer it to another committee or to simply take the position that is sufficiently taken care of by other ways. Any questions for clarity? Anything that is not clear here? Okay, shall we proceed then to Advocate Vasine again? Looks like he's got very short responses to this submission. Item number 10, a submission from Tamsana Ngbe.
Thanks, Chairperson. While the submission makes reference to the interrelationship between material and political inequality and our protests that form around these demands may have positive influences, the submission doesn't actually propose any amendments to the Constitution. It just highlights the fact that there is material inequality, but there's no actual proposal to amend the Constitution, so it's beyond the scope of the mandate of the committee to look into this matter.
The committee did indicate that there's nothing that falls beyond the scope. Like, what was the term that they were objecting to? Jurisdiction. But it's a matter that doesn't require a review of the Constitution. Yeah. Any comments? Nothing. Okay. Did you choose them deliberately or?
No. Christopher Nolan chose them.
Okay. Shall we now go to committee reference number 11, submission by Advocates for Transformation, Gaudenc Matabate.
Thank you, Chairperson. This submission proposes a number of amendments to the Constitution. It firstly suggests an amendment to Section 168.3, Section 8, 38, and 172. I'll start with section 168. Advocates for Transformation Chairperson argue that it is now accepted in law that the Supreme Court of Appeal has jurisdiction over appeals from the Labour Appeals Court. And they argue that that is a misdirection because clearly the Labour Relations Act intended the Labour Appeal Court to be an apex court insofar as labour matters are concerned. And they argue that the courts have the Supreme Court of Appeal specifically have in interpreting section 168(3) not given it a purposive interpretation, which is what is required when you're interpreting the Constitution. But they argue that in order to make the intention of the legislature clear, the Constitution needs to be amended to reflect that intention, which is clearly reflected in the Labour Relations Act. Chairperson, I agree with them. And that might seem that what is being argued is that the Constitution should be amended to bring it in line with the Labour Relations Act, which is not what is being argued. What is being argued is that the process of the Constitution, the drafting of the Constitution, happened at the same time as the process of the drafting of the Labour Relations Act. And when the Labour, or rather when the Constitution was being drafted, the intention of Parliament was insofar as the Labour Appeal Court is concerned was not taken into account. But it is clear from the Labour Relations Act that Parliament intended for the Labour Appeal Court to be the highest court of appeals insofar as labour matters are concerned. And I therefore recommend, Chairperson, that if indeed that was the intention of the legislature for the Labour Appeal Court to be the highest court insofar as labour matters are concerned, that the Constitution, because as it stands currently, the Labour Relations Act is unconstitutional because, I mean, it can be interpreted to bring it in line with the Constitution, but strictly interpreted it would be unconstitutional because the Constitution does say that the Supreme Court of Appeals is the highest court of appeal insofar as all matters except constitutional matters are concerned. So in order to reflect the Parliament's intention in making the Labour Appeal Court the highest court of appeal in labour matters, a constitutional amendment would be relevant.
You a member of this forum?
Chair, without even going into the assorted arguments, I'd like to point out that under the proposed rationalisation of the courts by the Department of Justice, the Department of Justice that is outgoing but also the new ministry, is, we have been advised as the Justice Committee, are seized with this matter. Now, it is part of the ongoing thinking that, in fact, the Labour Appeal Court will be incorporated with the SCA and the Labour Courts with the High Courts. Therefore, I can't think of a worse idea at this particular juncture without even entering into the various arguments, although I'm sufficiently curious to want to ask one or two questions. But it just seems to me unwise, to put it gently, to even think about amending 168 when we know the rationalization of the courts is in progress.
Are you aware of this development?
No, Chair, I was not aware. I think I looked at the Department of Justice website to try and establish what was happening, but I could not find reference at all of the labour courts on the Department of Justice. Because this are courts that were established by legislation by the Department of Labour, I rationalised it. But I was not aware of the developments, and I couldn't find any reference to it on the Department of Justice website, Chair.
I was curious myself as to what would happen in the case of what are called traditional courts when they are established and then the matter taken on appeal as to whether they would really want to have their own Supreme Court of Appeals. if labor matters would be given that kind of separate and special treatment. And so. But nonetheless, I think the submission is clear and her advice is clear, but we've also noted the developments that Honorable Smart is talking about, and we'll take the matter as it comes. We'll see the other developments as they are formally confirmed and communicated to Parliament. Mm. Of course, this is for understanding. You may proceed to Section 8 and 38.
Thank you, Chair. The argument insofar as 838 and 172 are concerned is interlinked. Advocates for Transformation argue that the courts have misdirected themselves in interpreting the application of the three sections to come to a conclusion that in order to invoke the Bill of Rights, one needs to rely either on legislation or common law, that you can't independently invoke the Bill of Rights. This, they say, was apparent in the decision of the High Court in Flog versus the Constitutional Court of South Africa. The decision of the then Witwatersrand Local Division. in which the court found that the Constitutional Court had indeed unjustifiably violated Judge Sopo's constitutional rights contained in the Bill of Rights, but declined to grant him a declaratory order. And advocates for Transformation argue that once it has been established by the courts that a right in terms of the Bill of Rights has been violated, Section 172 automatically kicks in, and Section 172 requires that once it deals with the powers of the courts, and it requires that once it has been established that a matter is inconsistent with the Constitution, that the court has to, it's mandatory that the court must give a declaratory order. In my view, Chair, is a bit premature, in that decision, or that interpretation rather, was an interpretation of one judge in the High Court who was dissenting. It was not in the decision of the main judgment, or the majority judgment rather. I therefore argued that it would be a bit premature to based on the interpretation of one judge whose decision was not really the decision of the court because it was a dissent, and not the highest court insofar as constitutional matters are concerned, because this matter has not been before the Constitutional Court. It would therefore be a little premature to amend the Constitution, because in any view, that is very clear. Section 8 deals with the application of the Constitution. Section 38 deals with locus standi, and Section 172 deals with the powers of the court when dealing with constitutional matters. Thank you, Chair.
Any questions for clarity? Do we understand the submission? Or do we not understand the submission? Okay, I take it to be true.
Curiosity, and let me confess that I seem to have mislaid the submission by the AFT, so I've not had the benefit of reading it. I agree with you. Obviously, the 138 deals with locus standi. And I mean, I find the whole argument very weird. But what I wanted to ask you about is just the Slope reference. They're referring to the case that was thrown out by the SEA, aren't they? So are they using it as an illustration of their irritation with the SEA or what? And they want to keep labor matters away. This is the case where Judge Harum said South Gauteng was simply wrong. I mean, a judge is no different from anybody else.
Judge Lopez suggested that nobody could say anything. The other judges couldn't say anything unpleasant about him publicly. And Judge Horam said truth and public benefit apply as much to a sitting judge as to any other a person. And defamation remains the mechanism you use. And which is to me crystal clear. And what I don't quite understand is the remarks about the Shlobe case in South Gauteng and how that pertains. Why did they use it as an illustration? So you may rule me out of order because I haven't read the AFT submission. And if I'm now just... Okay.
Yes.
I am going to speculate a bit, but I think the argument is if the one judge could misdirect himself, there's a possibility for other judges to misdirect themselves, and therefore it should be clear in the Constitution that you do not have an option of either giving a declaratory order or not. It must be clear that, because Section 38 says you may, and I think that's where the issue comes. That it's not an option, because if you read that with Section 172, you must then give a declaratory order once you have found that there's been a what is the term now, that the rights have been violated.
And why refer to the South Gauteng judgment when the SCA kicked it out?
I think that's been done before.
Are there any more questions for clarity? Then we'll proceed to the next one, which is number what? Number 12. Submission by Mkhalipi. Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mkhalipi, I'm not sure if you was a member of Parliament here, in fact. I remember working, but it doesn't appear from the submission at all. So I didn't read it in any way like that. But he makes some interesting remarks, interesting points, one of them being that the national project of Parliament, of the Constitution for nation building, is being neglected, Constitutional Day. That's in fact the last point he makes. The first point he makes is that he has a what he calls the most recent copy of the Constitution, which is full of embarrassing mistakes, and wants Parliament and the committee to review that and to have oversight over that publication. He also asked questions about the legislation that's required to be made in terms of the Constitution, and whether there is a discretion within Parliament to promulgate or to enact that legislation or not. Now, concerning his first question, you know, as a person that reads the Constitution, I do find it a very important point that what we read is correct in the Constitution. But insofar as Parliament has oversight over what is in a printed version, for instance, the one I'm using at the moment, I have my doubts. This is a private company publishing this. If the printed version is in the Government Gazette, Parliament has oversight over that, clearly. But if it's in a Juthastat, then Parliament doesn't have oversight on that level. Parliament can express itself, but you can't. We can even call Juta, but we can't review the Constitution as such. That's another point. This request actually doesn't fit within that constitutional duty of this committee in Section 45 and what the rules want to, the joint rules expect of this committee to identify constitutional issues which this committee will then review. So this is not a constitutional issue as such for me. And then as a remark, I point out that he uses a 2004...
So you mean if the public out there is misled by a company that reproduces the Constitution, then the Parliament has nothing to say over that?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Parliament for sure can say what it wants to. I mean, Parliament has expressed itself on issues that's, what I would say, even further removed from the public sphere than that. Parliament can express itself. I'm saying that the specific...
You're saying you can't even invite Judah to come in.
I would never even contemplate that. What I'm saying is that the specific request doesn't fall squarely within this issue of Section 45 of the Constitution to review the Constitution. We cannot correct that erroneous publication by reviewing the Constitution. That's what I'm saying. So one can express itself in a report to say to the House or to the Houses, I'm out of order, should I stop? No. My point is the committee can express itself to say, we've noted this and we think it's an important point and we want the Houses to take note of this and do something about it. But it doesn't fall within the issue of reviewing the Constitution. This committee reports back to the Houses, so that's where this will go. I'm not aware of a function where this committee can refer it straight to another committee. We must give it back to the Houses, and the Houses will decide where it will go.
You see, I don't know. I think advocate is adopting surely a very, very narrow definition of what review is. And I'd like to know, what does he mean by review? Surely if there are very serious, for example, grammatical mistakes in the Constitution, that would affect the interpretation. And surely it would be our duty in a broader definition of review to correct those, because it has direct implications on the effect of the Constitution and its interpretation. So for us to sit back and say, oh, it's none of our business, it's Jutta's, and surely we can, as Parliament, demand that Jutta withdraw these copies of the Constitution. The most important law of the land cannot be misinterpreted. And surely it is our direct responsibility, in terms of a broader definition of review, that it is our responsibility. As we go through the Constitution, we pick up serious errors. Good God, we must surely correct them.
Even if by way of the route you're suggesting, that we report to Parliament, but we do need to do something about such things. But as I say, it was a bad example of following. We'll continue, we'll note the points that would like clarity on.
You can't dismiss my point.
No, you have.
Yeah, I agree with the point. This is an important matter. I might look at the function, the core function of this committee as review a bit narrow, but you know, if I can finish, he talks about a 2004 version, printed version of the Constitution. The person who's making the submission doesn't indicate if it's a Butterworth or a Jutta submission, or a government gazette for that matter. And the constitutional version I use is the 2009 version. So there's been a few versions after that. So the discussion is in a way academic, I would say.
Chair, let us talk about the principle. Not if it's 2004 Constitution, 2008 Constitution, the principle of whether we review or not when it comes to these kinds of errors, the general principle.
Thanks, Chair. Okay, that was that. Yes, thanks. No, fine. That's not a problem. The issue of legislation required to be enacted by Parliament in terms of the Constitution. It's, of course, an interesting question. It has gone to the courts. The transitional provisions in Schedule 6 provides, for instance, that certain legislation must be made within a specific time frame. Promotion of Access to Information Act, Administrative Justice Act, Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, etc. Those were all had to be made within a certain time frame. Other legislation must be made within a reasonable time. One thinks of the issue of the UDM case of the floor crossing provisions, where Parliament made an act in terms of Section 76 and the Constitutional Court said you didn't do it within a reasonable time, therefore you must have a constitutional amendment now. In general, the Constitution says that all the obligations within and all the duties, constitutional duties, must be done within a reasonable time. Now, what's meant done diligently and without delay. So one reads those provisions and then one will say there is no discretion within Parliament when there's legislation that is required to make. Now, in this regard, the person, Mr. Kalipi, well, Mr. or Ms., it doesn't indicate, uses two examples. One is Section 77.3, which today we know as the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Act and Related Matters Act. Section 77.3 requires that Parliament must make such legislation. The other example, and that is the crux of his submission, is section 139.8, I think it is, which is the municipal laws to empower municipalities. It says national legislation may regulate the implementation of this section. Now that is a permissive word, may. So in fact, to get directly to the point of his submission, Parliament has a discretion. So this matter, in my opinion, can be referred to the Houses to say it's a policy matter. It doesn't necessitate a review of the Constitution in this regard unless, and he doesn't say it in his submission, we want to say you must make this legislation. And in that case, it's a policy matter again. So my view, that is not really an issue that one can say we need to review the Constitution. He's not asking for a review. He's asking for information, he or she. The last point, Honourable Chair, is the issue of the, what he calls the project, the national project of promoting the Constitution and nation building. And he or she correctly points out in the submission that this might fall outside the specific mandate of the committee. I would agree with Mr. Mkalipi in that regard. It does fall outside, but one can refer this matter to the House in the report to say we're neglecting, for instance, Constitutional Day, 10 May, if that is the feeling, and that Parliament should pay more attention, or that Parliament maybe should consider promoting it actively to put it back on the agenda if there's a feeling that it's not there. But it's once again not a specific constitutional review matter that the committee must identify in terms of its rules to review. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate. Any questions for clarity? And say this is the appropriate time to raise the questions Roy and I were raising earlier on. What are we saying about distorted versions of the Constitution that are out there in the public? Are we saying that is not a concern of ours? Can we say that?
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe it will also be a question to say, he talked about the one from the Gazette that we may legally raise concern if there are misprint or wrong spelling. But with any other publisher, we may take it up as a committee if it is coming from the Gazette process. But if it comes from Jutas or whatever it is, we don't have a jurisdiction, but we may take it to the House. Maybe then the decision can be taken there in terms of the wide implication of the misspelling and misinterpretation. I'm not sure whether up.
No. Something. No, sir. What I'm saying is that when we look at, I think it's Joint Rule 102 and Section 45 of the Constitution, what is required is that. Don't be this. Maybe there's another phone that's being used. This constitution, this committee, in terms of Joint Rule 102 and Section 45, must review the constitution annually, identify matters, that constitutional matters that he wants then to report to the House on. Okay, now, what I'm hearing and what I'm reading here is that it's about what version of the constitution are we going to look at to review it. Now, if one looks at the Constitution itself, it says in Section 82 there's a version of the Constitution. which must be entrusted to the Constitutional Court for safekeeping. But I agree, nobody actually goes, I've never done it, go to the Constitutional Court and request that authenticated copy. I get one from Jutta. Now, if Jutta has now made misprints in the thing, I would agree that that is a serious matter. I would just say that it's not a specific constitutional matter that one can review, but it is a matter we can report to the House. And as Mr. De Beer has correctly pointed out, this committee can call anybody to give it to give information or to present something and to explain to the committee even why this is happening. And I can continue on that, Chair. I know that Jutta and Butterworth, when they're reporting on court cases and legislation, they edit it before they publish it. Sometimes they make corrections in terms of their way of editing. And it might, I've never seen a real material difference in the two texts, but it might lead to different interpretations, worst case scenario. So what should this committee do with the constitutional text that's wrong? Now, it's really, I would say, when it comes to your attention, you know, if my personal opinion would be what we spoke about earlier, priorities. What are the priority issues for this committee? And if that falls within those priority issues, then the committee must call the publisher and say, well, we feel that you're misleading the public out there. But if there are other issues to look at first, then one will look at that, because I still feel that it's not squarely within that function of reviewing the Constitution. I
think preventing us from dealing with such a...
No, there's nothing preventing it.
So that is the point. We have several submissions before us, and obviously we need to prioritize which one to start with. It doesn't mean that there's anything that those that we do not prioritize cannot be dealt with by the committee. Mr. Tibet, and then Mr. Coroner. Then
Section 69 of the Constitution gives this committee the authority to call anyone to come and appear before this committee.
Chairman, can I just, you know, in his letter, he is clearly indicating the copies referred to are the ones bearing the 10 years of freedom emblem. Now, I've got 1 year. There is no misspelling of president in here. So I don't know which one he has used, and I don't know who's printing this. Is it Parliament? Or this is not Utah. Who's printing this? No, I don't see anything here. Department of Justice. Now, this is correctly spelled. So I think we must just inquire which copy he has used.
Yeah.
You know, really to go into a debate about this. And there is no other examples of what he's stating. He's just wasting.
He says in the preamble, the word see. Mr. Kornhoff says this is perfectly correct. In Section 4, the word president.
President
is fine. You see, so we keep on a problem. But I mean, the principle is still that.
Maybe
an old.
Yeah, but okay, then.
So it was not all runs of the.
Yeah, okay, this is different.
let's talk about the principle. It's obvious that there would be copies.
You see, there's
errors.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so there were different print runs.
So they have. Probably corrected. Tell him it's corrected. This is an old one.
Well, I think we understand the import of what it says. We shall have to decide as to what do we do about this submission. Mr. Jenkins has given us his view as to how we should deal with it. But Mr. Shannon, Mr. Aisley, did you still want to say something on this?
To say that at the very least we need to draw to the attention of Parliament that it's possible that incorrect copies of the Constitution have been sent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The most important to the law, the land, you know,
yeah.
All other laws depend on the Constitution. Mm. We can't simply ignore it.
It's the
so
one
at the very, very least, cover. I think we have to report the matter to the Speaker.
Okay. Well, as I keep reminding ourselves, we are not yet taking decisions on this, just having an understanding of the import of the submission. The next one is 14, due to be 13. The one from Kitasa will be advised by Gordon.
Thank you, Chairperson.
The submission by EDASA looks at Section 47 of the Constitution. And Section 47 basically speaks to the eligibility of being a member of the National Assembly. And what EDASA is proposing is that Section 47.1e be amended to look at the circumstances under which a member ceases to be a member of Parliament. Section 47.1e is the section that states that if you're convicted after the Constitution came into effect to a sentence of less than or more than 12 months, you would basically lose your membership. If you're convicted less than 12 months, you retain your membership. And what EDASA is saying is that they want the section amended to and broadened to look at categories of crimes such as bribery and corruption, which they consider to be serious crimes, to be included in Section 47.1e for loss of membership. Now, at the outset, I would state, yes, what we're looking at is a constitutional amendment. Whether or not it's going to be successful, that's for the committee to decide. But you'll see that the gist of the opinion that I presented to the committee was in the context of the report on the independent panel assessment that was conducted over Parliament. And the reason why I did that was because when you look at EDASA's submission, it's a mirror of what is in that report. So Parliament has had an assessment process conducted, and in the light of what happened during the tenure of the third Parliament, the travel liquidation and any and other matters that tainted the image of Parliament to a certain extent, and as well as the ethics in the institution, are all dealt with in the report on the assessment of Parliament. So EDASA raises the same issue before this committee, and squarely, yes, it's a constitutional amendment. But what is manifested is that the matter has already been referred to the Joint Rules Committee and the POA. So we have two other committees of Parliament looking at the same matter. And in that respect, this committee may have to decide how it's going to go forward, considering that there are two other committees looking at the issue that is before this committee as well. So I'm saying, yes, it is a constitutional request for a constitutional amendment, but the reality is that the Joint Rule Committee and the POA had this matter before them as we're deliberating at the moment. Thank you, Chair. That the committee decides to. Now, on a more serious note, like I said, the amendment request is a matter that falls before this committee. That's a constitutional amendment. But because we have the Joint Rules Committee and the POA dealing with the same matter, it may just result in three committees of Parliament doing the same work. And I draw the committee's attention to particularly page 98 of the report, where in the recommendations it says that Parliament should establish a task team to investigate the revision of the conditions under which a member of Parliament may cease to be eligible to hold his or her position in terms of Section 47. So the mandate from this recommendation in the report would be exactly what EDASA is proposing this committee to do, and for that there may be an overlap. This committee may decide to wait upon the Joint Rules Committee, interact with the Joint Rules Committee, decide it's taking the lead. That's for this committee to decide. But the reality is there may be three committees before Parliament doing the same thing.
I understand that, but the legal opinion you've been giving us all along has been to the fact that indeed this committee should amend, or this particular clause in the Constitution must be amended, or it should not be amended.
Chairperson, that's why I said fair and square, it's a constitutional amendment. It is a request for a constitutional amendment in terms of a section of the Constitution. And that's why I said it falls within the competence of this committee to deal with. Let me further clarify. Had this recommendation by EDASA not been captured in this report that's before Parliament on another committee, my answer to this committee would have been it's up to this committee to proceed and how they're going to deal with the amendment. Would the committee open it up to hearings, to further submissions, or to then be a process conducted by this committee? And I'm not saying that...
I don't want to belabor this, but I want it to be clear to everybody that there are submissions that are made. For various reasons, people call on us to amend the Constitution. And you give the advice that no, there's no need for the Constitution to be amended because this matter is already taken care of, either by the Constitution itself or in some other legislation. So you sometimes you say, no, go ahead, I think it's necessary, as has been suggested here by the other legal advisor. So what I was asking is, in your understanding of this submission, does it warrant an amendment of the Constitution, or is it not necessary? Not the question of who should facilitate the amendment.
Chairperson, it would be my opinion that it's really a policy decision. I think that the parameters of Section 47, as it stands, it's the submission for amendment is being made in the light of what has happened of the incidents that have plagued Parliament. And I think that if that is serious enough to warrant an amendment going forward, then that should be the overarching criteria. But that boils down to a policy decision of whether or not, the extent to which that, I'm not saying yes or no, because at the end of the day, it's a policy decision. But I'm saying, yes, there possibly would be credence in the request, but that is a policy decision.
I think I understand your position, because I would have thought that any amendment to the Constitution is a policy decision. Somehow, one way or the other, it would have political implications. The decision, nonetheless, lies with us, whether we're advised to amend the Constitution or not to amend. But I understand the stance you are taking. This thing affects, traditionally, it affects MPs. Roy?
I sympathize with the law advisor, because really she'll advise us on the legality of things, whether it's constitutional or not. But it is a policy matter. At what level of crookery should MPs... she can't say that. We've got to decide, yes, it's okay if you've been in prison for a year or 6 months. That's policy. It's not a legal thing, really. So you're putting her on the spot. It seems to me that Idasa was very astute in tabling this and sending it to us, because even though a comparable recommendation apparently appears in the, whatever it's called, the panel of independent so-and-so's, that being in the hands of rules and this extraordinary institution that's been invented, the POA, it might just sit there, it might die there, and I think Idasa feels sufficiently strongly, and in this case I think correctly, that there is a matter of public interest at issue here, and that Parliament should show good faith, and it should show willing to reconsider this particular section, which was the fruits of a particular time in our history. I think there's a great scope for expanding the ambit of the clause, and that people who have been found guilty of crimes of dishonesty really ought not to be parliamentarians. So I think we would be doing our institution a favour by supporting this proposed amendment, and by conferring with the rules and the POA in whatever manner you will know best, joint chairpersons, you will know best how to do this. But I would suggest we support this.
Yeah, well, we are not there yet. We are just supporting or not supporting. We just wanted to get understanding. I think also this document by the Kadazma Commission, as well as this one, the Independent Assessors of Parliament, they ought to be brought to us so that... especially if there are amendments to the Constitution that are suggested, we look at those, not the entire volume, but I think if there are amendments to the Constitution that are suggested, as it seems to be the case here, they should be brought to our attention.
Well, I'd like to support that. And are you making a formal proposal? Will we vote on it? Will it become a resolution of this committee? And we then send the request to the Speaker that both of those reports are referred to us.
The relevant part. No, I was merely saying that in light of what we took, a decision we've taken already, that if it has been brought to our attention that by anybody a constitutional amendment needs to be made, we need to pay attention to that. It's in that context that I'm saying this. As I keep saying, we are not yet taking decisions now, but getting an understanding will give ourselves time to discuss these submissions and take decisions. Shall we listen to Roy?
This particular one, it's a deep policy. I would prefer to first go into the to caucus, our caucus.
I thought you all went to your caucuses before you came to committees to take decisions, regardless of how deep or shallow they are. I think that is obvious, right, that members will go to their caucuses and get mandates and so on all of these issues, especially the ones that require discussion. The last one, by Vanara. The submission is by Mr. Ismail.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the 19th of June, 1913, the Native Land Act came into effect. And this kick-started a series of land dispossessions, which culminated in the early 90s with the repeal of the Act in question. And the Constitution in Section 25, subsection 7, is intended to remedy such an injustice. And it provides for an Act of Parliament to provide for the restitution to redress the injustices of the past. It would seem that Mr. Mkalipi made use of the Restitution of Land Rights Act to submit his claim. Mr. Ismail, sorry. And subsequently, there was payment paid in the form of compensation. It would appear that he is not happy with the compensation that he had accepted, and consequently write to the committee to request for legal advice on how to proceed with the matter. My view, therefore, is that the request does not relate to a constitutional amendment, and perhaps the committee could consider referring Mr. Ismail to a relevant justice center for legal advice on how to pursue legal remedies in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, obviously he ran out of money, so how will he get legal advice? Yes, any questions for clarity? It's not a matter that we want to refer to the portfolio committee on rural development and land reform, is it?
Chair, I have since learned that it's the way lawyers view issues differ from the way politicians view issues, and that could make a huge difference. So I wouldn't hasten to say no, but from a legal point of view, I, as a lawyer, wouldn't see a need. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, indeed, I suppose as a politician, I might be influenced by the ideas that seem to come around that the commission tended to encourage people to accept monetary compensation instead of land. That's why the land ownership patterns are still as good as they are. Maybe that is one of the symptoms of that position. But as you say, it doesn't call for an amendment of the Constitution. Right?
How do we normally respond to people who make submissions to us? Because I see in the final paragraph of the legal opinion that Mr. Ismail should be advised to approach the nearest justice center. Do we in fact do that as a committee? Once people have made submissions, will this committee in fact, the secretary on behalf of the committee, correspond with Mr. Ismail and advise him accordingly? And is that how generally we operate?
Yeah, who can advise us on that one? What do we, what has we been doing? Do we respond individually, or do we?
You can't ignore.
Do we rely on them seeing the report? Question.
Thank you, Chair. From my experience, I don't know if any of my colleagues would like to add or supplement or differ. From my experience working with this committee in 2005. The process unfolded that at the end, when the committee had decided what they're taking forward, what they looked at, what is being reported to the House, the institutions or people who made submissions would then actually get a letter back from the committee signed by the chairpersons to say, we have considered your submissions, we do not consider that it's a relevant constitutional amendment, but we thank you nonetheless, submit again next year with something new, or we thank you for your submission. It was an amendment. It's in the process now. And that's just to keep touch with the public. But there are formal letters that do go out after the process to the people or institutions who have made submissions. Thank you.
Civil enough. Well, those are the submissions that we have. Did you want to say something? Okay. Then we have dealt with item 2. We still have to go to 3. I think we need to take a break and have a smoke and coffee, or find our range down there for 10 minutes. We'll break for 10 minutes, which means we're coming back at 25 to 12. I'm in the we'll be able to conclude the deliberations on by the time we take, even earlier than the time we set ourselves. There are certain people who have indicated they have to chase aeroplanes, so I'm hoping we'll be able to go through. We did get a draft last time, as the minutes indicate. And the researcher, Mr. Dano, did present what we had requested him to prepare for us, to make our work easy. And there were certain discussions, there were certain proposals that were taken, some decisions that were taken, and some matters of which decisions were not taken. So we are discussing it now in order to hold discussions in to finalize our position and adopt it, the strategic plan of this committee for the period 2009 to 2014. I thought we need to request again Mr. Dano to present it quickly to us, because he will be familiar with the changes that had to be made in the aftermath of the discussions that we held last time. And thereafter we'll go ahead and take the necessary decisions. That seems to be acceptable to the meeting, Mr. Dana.
Honorable Chairperson, members, pursuant to our meeting held on the 18th of September, regarding the draft constitutional review strat plan, changes were suggested, and we were asked to go back to the drawing board and effect the necessary changes. I will start by speaking to the document as it was presented last last month, starting from the vision, and on that, just to say that I think the discussion did come up again regarding the use of the word activist versus proactive. And I think by now it is settled that activist is the preferred word. Relating to the mission, I think the first three core functions still stand, which is the analysis of the constitutional amendment proposals, reviewing the constitution through the public participation, which is the mandatory submission process, discussing policies impacting on the constitution. With regards to the oversight aspect of the commission's functions, about the implementation, or rather considering the implementation of legislation that is a direct impact on the Bill of Rights. I sense that the committee is very much reluctant to go into that at this present moment. I'm not quite sure, though, about the oversight over the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development's constitutional mandate, whether the committee would still want to go into that. By way of explanation, I made a point of following up on this constitutional mandate aspect just to understand what is it all about. The sense that I got is that it essentially deals with the three legislations, PAIA, PAJA, and PEPUDA, which is essentially the department running workshops, seminars, and all that, and trying to conscientize other members of the public about these three pieces of legislation. But the concern is that it would seem that there's no proper assessment of its impact in terms of whether there's any problems with implementation and all that. I thought the committee would want to hone in on that, but then that would have to be determined whether the committee would want to over and above what it has on its plate deal with oversight matters. Further to that, in today's discussions, there are issues that were hovering in the background that are equally important, which is the Azmal report as far as it relates to Chapter 9 institutions and possibly the collapsing of all the institutions into one umbrella body, and whether the committee would want to follow up on that. The second one is the report on the assessment of Parliament, which was triggered also by the Section 47(1) submission. And there was also another issue raised about the role of the committee with regards to oversight over Chapter 9 institutions. I think the committee would want to decide whether, over and above the three committees, it would want to do away with the oversight aspect and or the three issues I've just discussed, that the two reports, as well as oversight over committees. With regards to their core objectives, I think in the main...
I wonder if we shouldn't deal with the mission first, well, the vision, then the mission, and then proceed to any comments? Well, we've dealt with the vision. Besides an activist replacing a pro-activist, what other comments do you want to make, Dean?
Thanks to Mr. Donner for taking the trouble to go and look at what the constitutional development component of the department does. And if it turns out that the implementation and promotion of those three laws is actually what it does.
Let's look at the vision first. Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, the way I would write the vision is to change the constitution as little as possible. But no further comments.
So, okay, the vision is fine then. Shall we proceed to mission? Any comments on mission? My understanding is that the first bullet point is acceptable.
Yes.
The second one is acceptable.
Yes.
Then the third one, what are we saying on that one?
Yeah, what
in practical terms, how do we do that?
How did we discuss this last time? Did we think it was only when a green paper or a white paper was published, or when... I forget.
I thought we said it was after it has been...
Table.
...adopted. This is the once it is the white paper, because
oh.
It is only when it is the white paper that legislation will flow from it.
Yeah. I wonder how realistic.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking in practice how to do that. Let's just watch it and wait until it becomes legislation to see if that legislation doesn't. So we can take it out. Yeah? Discussion of policy. So we delete that one. Then overseeing the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development mandate.
I think we should keep that.
Should keep that one.
And then it means we can drop the next point, since it turns out that they are identical in any case, which is very fortuitous, and thanks to Mr. Downer.
So we delete bullet point number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, number 5. That one, okay. Any other comments?
Is the matter of proposed constitutional amendment as in the Chapter 9 review and in the panel's report, is that captured by... Oh, not really,
it
because...
Captured in
it isn't
captured... The four objectives or what?
Because just to add, I wasn't exactly sure as to whether we would, because it didn't feature in our last discussion. So now I've raised this as an issue that maybe it's for the committee to decide whether it's something that we'd want to add on to what we have.
Yeah, I think that the principle we took is that we were not going to say this and that body will be subjected to our oversight. But if there is any submission or anything that comes to our attention, like the Kader Azmal report or assessment by independent what report, and anything else, if it comes to our attention that they suggest an amendment to the Constitution, we'll call on the relevant body to talk to us about that suggested amendment. I think that's what you are saying.
Yeah. Mm. I'm just wondering whether the first point can't capture it, analyzing constitutional amendments. But we now mean as tabled, or because those reports are not tabled.
Analyzing constitutional amendment proposals before Parliament. Are they not before Parliament?
And they are before Parliament.
Mm.
The Chapter 9 review is not properly before Parliament. We adopted a resolution on the last day of the last sitting to create the unit in the Speaker's office, and noting the recommendation about their budgets coming through the parliamentary vote. But apart from that, I'm not sure that it is before Parliament. They are both reports commissioned by Parliament, aren't they? Analyzing constitutional amendments, I don't know how to put it.
Mm-hmm. Put your hand with
that. I'm thinking aloud here.
To say maybe bullet one may help us the very same chapter 9, because even if it's a portfolio, it's a chapter 9 institution falling under a certain portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
But where it suggests, that portfolio suggests constitutional amendment,
mm-hmm.
then it means it also has to be referred to us.
Mm. That should be enough, should it not? The mission statement is supposed to be short and crisp. Okay, you may proceed then to the next heading.
With regards to the oversight role, I think the development of justice and institutional development, the institutional...
Why do you put this in brackets? These words in terms of this constitutional development mandate?
The understanding, Chairperson, is that the department has twin overarching mandates. The first one being taken care of by the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development. And then the second one, which leads to constitutional.
Okay. Is there any
okay.
basis for that? Okay. So we remove the private.
I guess we'll remove it.
Okay.
Someone, and what? Why did you now have interaction over the following entities? The committee facilitates interaction over. You used to have oversight over, so your preposition is wrong.
Okay.
So what do we do? How do you phrase this?
I don't know. Interaction with?
Okay. With the following.
Okay.
Page 3.
Okay, page 3. With regards to the second one, the institution supporting constitutional democracy, I guess that one falls away.
It falls away.
Okay. core objectives, I think the first three, as we are...
Sorry, institutions of the committee deals with, include, do we retain that or do we not retain that? So I never know the difference between community-based organizations and civil society organizations. Chapter 9 and government departments. No, do we want to remove that? The last one?
Oh, you mean we might sometimes start?
Yeah. So retain the last one?
Yeah.
The only one to remove is chapter 9
institution.
May deal with. What is this?
Okay, I think that's a typo.
Core objectives.
Core objectives. I think the first three stay as already agreed. Yeah, I think that up to five. Core objective number four. I think.
What start on your core objective two? In the third line at the very end, before that's the commission one.
Where are you now?
Four.
Oh, are we done with number one? Okay.
My apologies, Chair. It was under the impression that the first three objectives have already been accepted. Right, yeah.
Okay, objective two. What did you say, Dean, about? You mean the line that says the committee may, through this process, develop a body of expertise? You have commission.
Our courses are saying the commission.
We will amend it accordingly. Thank you, Honorable Member. And I've just noted towards the very second last page, second last line of core objectives two. It should be saying the portfolio committee on justice and constitutional development.
Where?
It's page
the portfolio committee, as well as the NCOP
select committee.
Okay. But do we have to use words like tech for that?
Yes,
not you are a peace-loving people, don't have to talk war. So we'll find another.
Put in the synergy.
Put it
in the synergy.
Put it much more palatable.
Objective three.
Writing assessment of the Constitution. I'm not sure if members still feel that we need to remove that because it's framed in broad terms.
Which one?
MCO objective 3.
So what is it that here you say you're not sure if you want to remove?
The members would still want to retain it or have it moved.
Yeah, it's on 2.
It's positive assessment of the Constitution.
Yeah, well, we are expected to do that. That's by reviewing.
I'm trying to.
You think objective three repeats objective two? Maybe it might help us if we were to just quickly read the ongoing review of the Constitution.
Ongoing review of the Constitution through annual assessment recognizes that our Constitution is a living document that must be allowed to develop where necessary. An annual review of the specific aspects of the Constitution provides an opportunity to reflect on possible room for necessary improvement. and the ability to adapt to the changing needs of society. The joint committee could take proactive and initiative in facilitating and participating in the discussion and review. However, this presents the following challenges regarding the best possible approach to effective any possible constitutional reform. One, the need to provide a framework for such an approach that is relevant in terms of reference and the necessary for expertise and achievements. Just to provide some kind of background on that, Chairperson, I think that that was because of suggestions relating to possible discussions on constitutional reform issues like the provincial system and all that. But I think now the understanding is that would be in the form of like policies. So I'm not quite sure if the first one, the analysis of constitutional amendment proposal, is wide enough to accommodate that, or should we allow that to stand on its own in broad terms?
To go and capture what is the...
Okay.
If that is the view, then we'll delete the co-objective 3.
Okay.
This means co-objective 4 would be 3.
Yes, it would be to main.
Okay, take
your remain is on aeroplane 2. The aeroplane is on 3. We'll still elaborate on 2.
Oh, we okay. Take them to 2.
Thank you.
Okay. Are we together here? That the aeroplanes in under 3. We fly to under objective 2. Okay.
Under co-objective 5 is oversight over the...
No, 3. The new 3, what do I say? Did you take us through that one?
Okay. My apologies, Chair. Engagement on policies impacting on the Constitution. Policies that may impact on the Constitution may set the tone for possible constitutional reform. The committee may have a role to play in this regard. Whether this may essentially be a political exercise is best left to political parties and their agendas. Or it can be something that can be deliberated on by members. But my feeling is that at least we should leave the door open so that should we want to the committee to engage on this, we might want to do that subject to maybe like rules or terms of reference framed on an ad hoc basis. I don't know, Chairperson.
Didn't you craft this objective on the basis that you initially said that we would want to review policies that may have an impact on the Constitution, and seeing that we've deleted that one in the commission, we've deleted it.
Yes. Yes, I'm seeing that.
So did not therefore logically fall off.
Deleted. Okay.
It should fall off.
Okay.
You must be careful not to be left with nothing to
work on.
Okay, co-objective 5 would be
oversight
our 3 now. We will retain it. Yeah, we will retain it.
Oversight over the constitutional development mandate of the department. Okay. I think that we've already spoken about this.
Is that the reason, the fact that the chairperson said it does not seem to have been any effective oversight over the department? You want to say that?
I wasn't in justice for a few years, but isn't it true?
No.
Is it not true?
It's true. It's true, but is it really necessary?
Oh, okay.
That it can be improved.
What can be improved? No, we accept that we have to do our oversight over that section in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. But what I'm saying, do you want to state it here that is because there has not been effective oversight all along?
I think that would be...
What if we remove it? What do we lose? That cannot be the basis for us wanting to provide oversight. See, some of us work in that committee, which I suppose they've done this work.
The forgotten money.
The second one. Yeah. We'll end up with a mess. indeed, do we then? You can leave it at that. Let's retain that one, but remove the other one. So the word we're removing is that there does not seem to have been any effective oversight over the department in this regard. Okay. Key issues facing the committee.
Okay. Effective follow-up mechanisms on extending submissions for the last 5 years. I think the committee has taken concrete decisions in that regard, so that falls away now, or rather we're on the way to making concrete inroads into those, subject to the program that will be crafted in taking those forward.
Yeah, I think let's retain it.
Mm. Extending adoption of the report on deliberated 2008 submission. I think this one is.
What is this? There's something wrong there.
Okay. What happened? But by way of background, Chairperson, what happened is that the outstanding committee didn't complete its work as it is. They did deliberate on the submissions, but the report has yet to be adopted, and the adopted report would then have to be tabled at both houses, if I understand the rules correctly. That has yet to be done, so I think it's something that we might want to consider urgently.
Yeah, this is legal. What does Parliament do? What do other committees do with work that was not finished by other committees? Do we simply adopt them? Or do we... What happens? Do we start afresh? What is the experience in other committees?
I don't know. Comparable to the kind of direct work dealing with the public. If you think of all the ad hocs that interrupted their work last year, a lot of them, this forensic bill that's coming to the police crowd now, which should have been ours in Dublin, that was an ad hoc committee that interrupted its proceedings to carry over to the next parliament. The ad hoc committee on intelligence did an information law which we interrupted to roll over to the next parliament. But none of those are legislative processes. I'm not aware of any other comparable thing where one owes a duty to those. Do we know, Mr. Darnow, through you, Chair, whether those people were given replies? If those members of the public were given their replies?
I can most certainly follow up on that, Honourable Member, and then get back to the committee.
Because then, Chairs, then it's not as though we're leaving the members of the public twisting in the wind. And then maybe we can let this report lapse.
Yes, let's. Okay.
What do you think? Otherwise, we have to do all of their work all over again.
Yeah. So, in short, what do we say about that? That item? What are you saying? We should delete it or leave it as it is? Yes, Mr. Ambrosini, the food is about to be set.
Apologies, I was...
Can we phrase it like a
deliberation on 2009 submissions, and I think that's still to happen. Report on the 2009-2010 submissions are still to happen. Outstanding annual committee budget and plan. I
think that's for the management committee to sort out.
Annual committee budget. Okay.
Outstanding strategic framework plan. Okay, that should fall off.
Should what?
That should fall off. I think that's what we are just about to conclude.
So we delete that?
Yes, we do delete that. Lack of publicity regarding submission process. Your submission is good.
You think the future wishes we are getting is because of lack of publicity?
I think it's a good thing.
Sorry, where are we?
You don't want to encourage the idea.
Commission.
The Constitution is under the
Commission. It is under report.
And the other reason would be that they don't seem to see the amendment that they are asking for being made.
So that falls away.
So we could delete that.
Possible lack of a clear cooperation with other committees on matters of common interest. I think it's taken care of with the strategic plan and page.
So why don't we start with the second part of that? That they need to develop formal, informal mechanisms to improve collaboration with other committees on matters of common concern.
Okay. Last one, implementation of clear management processes for the committee. The management committee has already started a meeting, so that should be deleted as well because we've already had two meetings by now.
Which one is that?
And the last one, Chief, is implementation of clear management processes for the committee.
I think the process is beginning to smoothly now.
Okay, so that should be deleted.
Yes, thanks.
The next one,
Chairperson, is basically a breakdown of the core functions of the committee. The submissions process, which is the goal, activities, outputs, key performance indicators, and time frame.
To bring you some glad news. Mm-hmm. The Nobel Prize for Peace has been won by Barack Obama.
What for?
Isn't that cool?
Wow. On account of what?
He's putting an end to the war that has been waged by
United
States.
Okay.
That is a positive influence. Okay, that's good news. Let's move with speed.
Okay, legislation. The second one is legislation, which is the constitutional amendment and bills. Goals, activities, outputs.
Yeah.
It's page 7 of the fact.
Page 7.
Only a
fact.
That's the one. Yeah, our apologies again, honorable members. What was supposed to have happened is that the second document was supposed to have been merged with the first one. But I'm sure that will be...
So the page 6, we have page 6. It's headed submission.
No, it's small.
We can work on a small.
It's now a different
one. Oh, the separate one. You don't have the consolidated one.
We do have.
Use the consolidated one. The one that is part of this document that we've been dealing with. Well, I think we felt that it might be cumbersome and clumsy to have these two documents separate. So they must talk to, the last one must talk to the first part of this document. That's why I encourage you to use the one that is attached to the judgment of the entity.
Legislation and
is one, submissions and main tasks, activities, outputs, KPI, template. This is the one you're using, right?
Yes, yes, yes. That's the second one.
Thereafter, policy review and oversight over the department. And then, goes on and on until page 10.
No. Not really, yes. I can listen. No, I can listen, please.
Take us to the constitutional, to the goals, and then activities.
Okay, in under legislation, the goal is the analysis of bills amending the constitution, but not constitutional amendment. There is this amendment today. The activities would include everything.
No, that's the one that's Canadian. You can look it on the internet.
Okay, you look it on the internet.
You can show them
the unit would do an analysis of the
data
and present it to the committee so that the committee is in a better position to understand the key issues for consideration once it's made and the outputs of thorough analysis of constitutional amendments. Key performance indicators and the science process of analysis of the time frame is 2000 to 2014, which is as they come in. Policy review, the main goal is the review of policy, consideration of policy, and the right hand of policy.
We did say that,
that falls
out. We are deleting that. Mm-hmm. We're not dealing, Dr. Ambrosin, with the policy review anymore for reasons you have accepted.
With regards to number four, oversight.
It will be number three, eh?
Number three, sorry.
It will be number three.
Oversight over the development of the constitutional development, which seems to be a constitutional development. And activities is basically collecting, facilitating, and keeping up ultimately what we anticipate is the situation where the department would come in to break up with this constitutional constitutional development aspect. So that does not entail me.
So that means you don't have to go anywhere now.
Yeah, I think if it's in the life of that, I think we have to like revisit the whole and the framework. But I thought of
But there should still be key performance indicators, even if we are not conducting oversight visits.
Yes. I thought I would speak to the committee about the Quality Review Committee, which is a body tasked in terms of the promotion of quality and prevention of unfair discrimination, which tables the report to the Ministry's Office on implementation of the State Act. And I'm not sure if the committee would want to have something that body as well in terms of the implementation of the Act, as far as it relates to the constitutional development one day.
So we could invite the team alongside the
party.
But if you think it's useful to sit in
I think we, under KPI, we remove oversight visits held when necessary, then retain reports with youth budgets considered when we retain them. Page 9.
Okay, and that still speaks to the activities, the renewal of reports and budget. I'm not sure if we would like to go the renewal of performance and the approach. But I'm unable to draw up the committee to figure that.
I think we talked here about, for instance, the need for us to look at the reports the Kadazmal report as well as the other report, independent assessor of parliament. Maybe we could say scrutinize what? By find a way of referring to such a document. Because we don't want to scrutinize the annual report and budget, except with respect to that unit in the Department of Justice. Scrutinize relevant reports.
And the next one, Chairperson, strategic relations. I think in a nutshell, this is, I think we've just spoken about.
Are you on, what page are you on?
Page 10, sorry.
We still have to deal with page 9. For instance, the bottom one, facilitating oversight over legislation giving effect to constitutional rights in the Bill of Rights.
Yes, Chairperson, I think I did speak about especially the briefing about the quality of the committee. I'm not so sure now about the Human Rights Commission, whether I would want to involve them as an independent.
We could. So are we retaining that caller?
The very last one on page 9.
Yeah, are we retaining it? Oh. There's no harm in retaining it, is there harm?
Yeah.
Let's retain it. Page 10.
And the last one is strategic. Strategic relations. Here, Chairperson, we envisage a situation where, especially when we deal with issues that may not necessarily encroach on other checks, but situations that are joint or common interest, a situation where we're able to deal with other committees and get some kind of like understanding of how we're supposed to deal with
quite necessary. But what seriously now, we've mentioned a need for a visit somewhere in order to make sure that our committee is effective and efficient. Is it not necessary for us to go see some other countries?
Now, what was the last thing we heard? Only Kenya had a directly comparable embassy.
Is that
right? Maybe we should go to other countries to see why they
have. Yeah, something like that.
In many countries they have an ongoing function in the constitutional committee where they receive submission without a special committee being appointed, and they've had all committees. I can give the chair some indication of what I know of. I don't want to draw water in my direction, but Italy has got a very nice one.
Italy and Germany.
Yeah, in Germany.
And then on the way to Kenya.
Yeah.
Then stop to Kenya.
Yeah, we don't want to wait until the turbulence has come in. Then where do we get money for that?
Are there any Italian democratic foundations that might be sponsored?
The trade unions in Italy have a very strong connection with Cossato and have sponsored lots of parliamentary trips. I wouldn't be the right person to approach them.
And what about the
foundation?
The Cordon Adenauer, yes.
They previously invited the justice.
No, we didn't talk to them. So Italy, Germany, and in the other, Kenya. Should it be before or after? Should it be before or after the election in Kenya? Okay, on that basis, therefore. the church plan has been adopted. But I think what is still to be done is what did you say needed the management committee? Budget. Okay. But I think we need to thank Mr. Dano, the award treasurer, for the work that he's done for us, because started from nothing, from this committee, and came up with a document that is actually very happy with. Gave us a basis for our work. Now, the next meeting, we've been suggesting that we hold the next meeting on the 20th of October, and the next one on the 13th of November. 30th October and 13th November. Which means then that the trips will have to be to Italy and will be next year. The 13th of November one will be the last one for this year. Well, that brings us to the end of our deliberations. The meeting is adjourned and we are invited to a finger lunch. I thought it was going to be a sitting down lunch. What are that? Okay.